This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Hello and welcome to The Forum. My guest on this weekend's show, Patrick Murphy, Superintendent of the Monolith School District. Welcome to the show, Superintendent Murphy.
Thank you.
We are going to discuss today a second round of funding that schools received. That is due to COVID-19 and most of that new funding coming from what was called the American Rescue Plan. And in January, school districts, they received funding for COVID-related expenses and other things. And then in March, it came out that there was going to be a second round of funding. And once the figures come out, it appeared maybe the second round of funding was even more than maybe, say, school districts anticipated. And maybe you could talk about what you felt when that actual dollar amounts were released.
In each school district, it's a little different, but we'll start with, and you're correct, from the stimulus package that was passed in December, and we received information in January, which we know as ESSER-2, is still in terminology. Mount Olive School District received $346,592 toward, and again, it's towards for the pandemic and how to get kids back into school for in-school learning. The new, the ESSER-3, which was passed in March, and we'll actually get to apply for in July, but yet the numbers have came out. Mount Olive is going to receive $778,019. There was one stipulation that came into ESSER-3 money, and that was that 20% of that money has to be used for learning loss. So because we also realized since we've been out, a lot of schools have had to do remote learning since March of 2020, and throughout some schools like Chicago or Decatur, Springfield are just starting to get back now, but we know there's going to be some learning loss. So we have to focus 20% of those ESSER-3 funds on to fix either helping stop the learning loss that occurred during this pandemic.
Well, the funding that came out, it appeared that it wasn't, say, per capita of the school district, not who has the most students, they got the most funding. And maybe you could address that in that how was it actually funded when they made the decision?
Sure. And the main factor in determining that was actually your Title I. So federal government, we get so much money each year for Title I, which is a federal government program. And the main factor in that is your number of free and reduced lunch students, your low-income students. So the main factor that goes into that is actually the percentage of low-income students you have within your community.
You addressed that 20% had to be used for what was determined as a learning loss. Maybe you could go over that a little bit more. Learning loss, how will those funds actually be distributed then as to bring back learning loss?
Absolutely. And I know my Mount Olive administration have been working, and we have an evidence-based funding committee, have been working and having discussions about some of that information as well. We also have done some data, collected data on our students, and we found that it's our primary grade levels, kindergarten through second grade, have the most significant learning loss has occurred between this. And it all sort of makes sense because who's going to struggle the most with remote learning? It's not your junior high and high school kids who may struggle some, but they're getting through it. But your primary age students, think about your 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old students trying to learn remotely on a day of school. We knew that would be a large challenge, and now our test scores are showing that these students have fallen behind because it's just not been as successful as we wanted it to be, but we knew it would be very difficult to do in the first place. So when we talk about learning losses, how do we bring one of those children's score if they're averaging, 50 on a norm test this year where the average student last year was averaging 90, how are we going to bring those children back up? How are we going to get them back to their age-appropriate learning level? So some of the obvious things that Mount Olive is doing, and I'm sure a lot of other school districts around the area are doing, will be providing summer school. We'll be providing summer school to those students in need, so we're giving them extra time. And this is also going to be face-to-face instruction, which, and I'll talk more about learning loss in a second here, but which way one of the major pushes for ESSER-3, this newest one, which is this larger amount of money you were referring to, is the main goal now is to get to back to face-to-face instruction. Everyone in who understands education understands that face-to-face instruction is by far the most effective way to educate students. So it's what we're even required to put out a statement to our communities before we even apply for ESSER III funds is showing how we're going to get back to face-to-face instruction. For schools like Mount Olive, we've been in face-to-face instruction almost throughout this entire school year, but yet it's our goal to get back to a full day of school next year. We understand that remote learning is very difficult for students to learn at a good rate, so we need to get back to face-to-face instruction. But back to learning loss real quick. So summer school is obviously our first one, but we also will provide tutoring, like before and after school tutoring during the school year. Something that I didn't mention, but these ESSER II and ESSER III funds, they're not like have to be spent by September. There's an actual quite a wide range, our time frame to spend the money or use the money. And that range actually goes back to March of 2020 when this pandemic began. And for ESSER II funds, we have until September 2023 to spend the money. For the ESSER III funds, the larger pool, which we're talking about, you have until September 24 to spend the money. So we want to do summer school for the next 2 or 3 years we're planning for. We want to incorporate tutoring. We want to incorporate what curriculum level materials are we going to need to remediate some of this learning loss. So that's three of the main functions that Mount Olive is going to be doing, and to work with students who may have not got the instruction they needed and are a little bit behind right now to, in essence, to bring up the learning loss that occurred during this pandemic.
I guess that would be the language that was used when the funding came out. You have a 3.5-year period to spend that money over or use that money. Is that also going to apply to the 80% where the school districts, I guess, have been pretty well given the go-ahead to do what they think's most prudent with the rest of the money?
That's correct. So, you know, it gives us more flexibility than most grants to use the money in a variety of ways. But again, with the main focus being is how do we get back to in-school instruction with this ESSER III? So I know I've talked to some superintendents who are turning in these applications for ESSER II right now, and they're sending them back and go, well, how does this apply to learning loss with COVID? Or how does this apply to getting kids back into school? So is it janitorial supplies? Is it the misters that, you know, you're spending? So they're still making us have goals of making sure our kids are getting back to face-to-face instruction.
As far as the 80%, what is some of the ideals or the best uses for that, or what are you considering, say, at Mount Olive?
It's gonna be quite different among a lot of other schools. But, for example, at Mount Olive, we're looking at some of the things such as and then these are when we haven't finalized these. So before I even start to say the numbers, I hate to say certain things because I'm working with a committee that's with teachers and administrators, with school board members and community members to talk about what are the best uses for this money. But some of the things that we've had discussions regarding is we've talked about trying to get, because of the pandemic, so here I'll tie to because of the pandemic, we've noticed that a lot of kids are coming back to school in the easiest term, heavier than they came. No, the physical activity has went down drastically. So we've talked about incorporating for physical activity and remodeling our weight room and putting that into the classrooms so at our high school level that you can get cardiovascular and different activities from the weight room. We've talked about remodeling our playgrounds and adding more modernized basketball rims. You know, and they say it's because our kids need to get outside because of the problem we have with that. We've talked about adding curriculum materials that for kids who have to stay remote next year because we want our teachers to be instructing kids within the school, and it's impossible, and for a full day of school, and it's virtually impossible for a teacher to be teaching 8 to 3 with a full classroom of kids and then also be expected to do virtual learning. So having software programs for children that have to stay remote, where parents choose to make them stay remote, where they'll just have a software program for their education. But as a caveat to that, we're not going to encourage that at all because we think it's vitally important for those kids to be in face-to-face instruction. We're going to be purchasing counseling services from Macoupin County Health Department because the social-emotional damage we are finding kids have such social-emotional distress right now through this pandemic that we have more kids than ever that need social work services. So we're going to be purchasing services from the Macoupin County Health Department to bring, right now we bring over a social worker one day a week. We're going to increase that to 2 days a week next year. So we're very happy to be working with the Macoupin County Health Department to supply that as well. We're going to put some money for truancy. Some children and families, as sad as this sounds, just chose not to come. We're doing remote learning, but they never come online. And I know a lot of school districts are now facing failure rate because of this, but we've been working hard, and we've been working with the Regional Office of Education and hired a truancy officer who's a police officer during the regular day, but comes and works as a truancy officer with us to encourage families that they must, their children, children from 6 to 18 are required to come to school, and it's the parents' responsibility to get them to school. And we've had a lot of success this year with the truancy officer working with the school and working with our community and parents to get kids back into school or to get kids online remotely. So we'll be dedicating money for that as well, because we feel that's just vitally important to make sure that gets taken care of. A couple others on our list that we're considering daycare, not daycare, summer school care. Our community, we have a lot of working families, and we know that we're going to be providing day camps. There's different words for them, but we're providing summer school, but we're also going to provide these camps for kids' interest, music camp, art camp, because school needs to be fun as well, and so we're going to provide different camps for kids this for the following next few summers to give them excited about coming to school, and also an opportunity to learn with that. It can be athletic camps. It can be so a different variety of camps we're going to be offering. But then it goes with that for families that are working. We're going to provide daycare during the summer for those families as well. And there will be a cost. The families will be expected to pay some for that, but we'll supplement that also with this ESSER money. So there's just a few things that we're looking at that are going to be incorporated into our ESSER funds.
We still are not out of the COVID era yet, obviously. And I was just wondering, and this is purely probably an opinion question, but do you think there'll be any more help or funding or grants or whatever for school districts related to COVID in the future? Or do you think this is sort of coming to the end of that type of funding?
And I'm going to put two spins to that for you. I don't, obviously we don't know what the future holds as far as illness or sickness or if there, God forbid, if there'd be another spike or anything like that, which could change my opinion. But I'm very hopeful with vaccines going into arms at a very high rate that we're coming to an end with this funding. But it's not because of the funding, but just because of the pandemic. I want to get back to a normal education process because it's what's best for kids. So I want to get back to face-to-face instruction. So I'm very hopeful this is the end of the federal funding for this because I want back to normalcy. But it's sort of a two-edged sword. When we want to talk finances, the state of Illinois made a commitment a few years back with evidence-based funding to fund the schools that are and they tiered the schools, tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four, with tier one schools being significantly less per child spending than the tier four schools were spending large dollars amounts up in the Chicago suburbs. They based the funding formula on giving the most money from here on to schools that were spending the less. Mount Olive is a tier one school. Most schools in this area are tier one schools. So a lot of the new increases from the state are supposed to come to these schools to catch us up. They made a rule that they want, a goal that they wanted by 2027 to have us to the 90th percent funding rate. We're at like 67% right now. Schools around us are very similar. Here comes the problem of the two-edged sword. The state of Illinois also has problems. They're not increasing our funding. This is now they haven't made a decision yet, but the governor has come out and proposed flat funding again for public education. They make this commitment to schools, and then the state is not following through with this. Now, maybe the legislators will overrule the governor's proposal. We'll find out by the end of May. But, yes, we get this federal funding, one-time money, but if you want to try to use that for salaries or something like that as a superintendent, I would strongly tell you that's not a very smart move because 2 or 3 years down the road when that money runs out, you're going to be in a financial mess when you have a ton of expenditures and not enough revenue. So we need the state to step up and get back into evidence-based funding, because when they fund that, that becomes the norm, and that money's it's supposed to be forever until they rise us up where we're supposed to be. So when it comes to finances, we still have plenty of challenges ahead here, because one-time money is great right now, but it's not going to solve our long-term problems.
And speaking of things that are back and forth, we'll maybe take a step aside here from the school funding issue, but have been talking with some superintendents around the area and thought we would just visit with you for a moment on the subject of graduation. Now, it's not quite as chaotic as it was last year when COVID was just really kicking in and high school graduation, everybody was wondering how to do it or how to put something together for those graduating high school and so forth. But again, this year, there's been a few movements where it was really looking really good when the word the bridge was there, but that got moved back. And so we've got things to consider. And sort of where's Mount Olive at this time, as we're very close to graduation?
And we're really fortunate. Sometimes there's a blessing to be a small school and over these larger schools, and being a larger school, and there's much larger. But Mount Olive's going to graduate 28 students this year. And so that when people like Gillespie and Staunton and Carlinville and Litchfield, you know, are more around 100. And we all have gymnasiums. They have probably a little bigger than us, but we all have a full-size gymnasiums as well. And when we went to Phase 4 and the new rules changed a couple months ago, we got to go up to 25% capacity. It used to be just 50 people max spectators, and you know, and obviously we could do nothing like that. But with 25% capacity, our gymnasium has a capacity of 1,258. So it gives us the opportunity, because of the new rules with Phase 4, and you're right, with the bridging would even be better, but yet even with Phase 4, we get the opportunity to go to in-person. We're going to get to have a traditional graduation this year, but we, with our 28 graduates, we will limit the numbers, but we're still going to follow the health department rules. We'll give so many tickets to each child, so because right now my understanding is we can have up to 25% capacity in our indoor facility, which we will not go above that, but limiting the number of tickets per person. Our graduates will wear masks. Our spectators will wear masks at all time. We are going to do a few things just a little bit differently. Instead of handing the diplomas, we'll set them on a table because, again, following the health department rules and regulations. But we're very excited that we're going to get to go back to a traditional in-person graduation, and it's because of our small size. Because I would fully understand these larger school districts, it's just impossible because of the numbers to be able to hold that. But we're very excited that on Saturday, May 8th, less than a month from right now, at 7 p.m., we're going to get to have a traditional in-person, obviously if health conditions remain the same, an in-person graduation.
It was very hopeful, maybe, had the everything went right. We could have even been to 60% had everything held. That's what they were counting on, probably.
Yes, and that would have been the bridge, which we've not reached to that yet. We've not reached that goal yet, that standard.
Something else I heard, and maybe you'll address this, or it's just not something that can be done, but for instance, say it was a larger school, or for your school, at 25%, you know, a lot of times in the old days, it was grandparents and all kinds of folks attending. Is there any plans for something different, or will it just be the in-person and nothing else where, you know, it'll have to be taken care of, I guess you would say, at a family level?
Sure. And we're still, something that we did last year and we're looking into, we haven't finalized the plan, but last year we looked at we did a parade, which was the seniors got into the cars so our whole community could celebrate that. And we have a wonderful community where the fire department led the parade down our main street, and so we did that. So that was an option that we're still considering. And so there's things such as that. We may broadcast it as well. If you've probably noticed, we broadcast all basketball, all our sporting activities have been broadcast this year, so people who can attend in person can absolutely see the broadcast. So there's a very good, strong possibility that we'll be broadcasting our graduation as well for those who cannot be there in person because of our limited numbers.
Superintendent Patrick Murphy, thank you for joining us on the forum this weekend.
Thank you.
And you can join us again next weekend for another edition for WSMI. I'm Rick Davis.